This week in KMA Land, Shenandoah Council sets property tax levy. Shen Water Ordinance Amendment clears first reading. Page County Conference Board sets assessor's salary. Page County Jail construction progresses. Bridge project set in Clarinda. And a crusty man is charged with grooming. I'm Mike Peterson. From taxes to water to nuisance issues, the Shenandoah City Council tackled a long list of agenda items this week. By unanimous vote Tuesday evening, the council approved the proposed property tax rate for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. Council members also set a public hearing on the proposed levy for March 24th at 5:30 p.m. Council members set the levy following a half-hour budget workshop preceding the regular council meeting. Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman tells KMA News the proposed levy is approximately $15.02 per $1,000 valuation, an increase roughly 55 cents per thousand from the current fiscal year's rate. Lyman attributes the increase to rising insurance costs, something every community in Iowa is dealing with.
You know, we saw, I want to say, on the liability side, a $500,000 annual increase on that right there. And then when you factor in the property and the workers' compensation, then health insurance, vision, dental, all those things, you know, that nothing's getting cheaper out there, as everybody knows.
However, Lyman says Shenandoah's tax rate is comparable with other communities in the region.
Well, I think if you look in the area, our taxes are one of the lowest for sure, especially considering all the services that this community provides or the city provides to this community. Thinking back, this is my eighth or ninth budget now. You know, when we started, we were pushing 20, you know, every year. So it's nice to see that come down and, also not to see the services suffer as a result of lowering that overall levy.
Lyman lauds the city's department heads for attempting to keep expenses low, even with increased salaries for staff members.
You know, we always approach every budget season as what are the needs, what are the wants, what are the nice-to-haves. And so we have that conversation every year and figure out, you know, whose turn is it for new equipment or whose turn is it to, you know, tighten their belt a little bit if need be.
One issue hanging over city officials in Shenandoah and other municipalities is the prospect of property tax reform at the State House. One proposal from Governor Kim Reynolds caps property tax revenue growth for cities and counties at 2%. Lyman says the cap could mean tough decisions for the city in the future.
Right now we're making it all work. We haven't had to decide between people and services and things like that. If something were to change like that at the state level, I would not be surprised if we had to start making those really tough decisions.
No decisions on property tax reform are expected until the end of the 2026 legislative session. Proposed changes to Shenandoah's Water Conservation Ordinance Amendment cleared the first hurdle this week. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council approved the first reading of an amendment to Chapter 93 of the city's Water Conservation Ordinance. Council members took action after Councilman Richard Jones suggested minor tweaks to the amendment's verbiage. Jones says the word should in statutes regarding water watches and warnings should be changed to shall.
To me, the word should is subjective, but then I'm not real sure it's in stage one. Maybe Tim can answer this, if it should be no water shall, or if it should say should, or minimize, or what.
City Water Superintendent Tim Martin agreed with Jones's wording change suggestions. The first reading passed after no one spoke at a public hearing at the beginning of the council meeting. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen says he was surprised with the lack of response.
I really felt there'd be some people there asking questions on this since, this is a complete revamp of the current conservation ordinance we had. I thought the citizens that would, you know, want to know when this goes into effect, what the changes are, would be there to ask questions.
McQueen, however, is leery of misconceptions regarding the amendment spreading through social media. One misconception is that the amendment will increase water rates. The mayor says, not true.
And this is no way going to affect that for the regular customer. Now, there will be, you know, when these stage one, two, or three are in place, there will be conservation measures, there will be penalties and so forth applied. So, but as far as your normal daily water rate, this has no effect on it. These are measures put into place that we have to have to do some kind of water conservation until we get our water situation taken care of.
Something that wouldn't change under the amendment is the city's water status. McQueen says Shenandoah would remain under a water emergency or the current stage four water restrictions because of the lack of moisture this winter.
At the current time, sadly, our wells have dropped about 8 inches over the last 2 weeks. And so if we were hoping that when this ordinance went into effect, we could probably be in a stage two. But we're borderline right now. You know, we'll just have to see by the time this actually gets through. But we're borderlining right now between stage two and three on the new ordinance. And so here again, until we can get some moisture in those wells, that's where we're at.
The amendment's second reading takes place at the council's next regular meeting, March 10th. Then there was a nuisance abatement issue pitting the city against a property owner seeking another extension. Earlier this week, the Shenandoah City Council tabled a request for a 6-month extension for a nuisance property at 308 East Washington Street. Back in April, the council granted owner Stephen J. Smith a 9-month extension with the stipulation that electrical and water services were restored to the property and that he make planned updates, including repairs to an apple shed. In a discussion lasting over a half hour, Smith argued certain issues have stalled progress on renovation work, such as one involving a water line in his property. He says a letter from the city informing him of lead piping on his property put him in a tough position and alleges the city is responsible for replacing the line.
I've had a number of people want to rent the property. Okay, we're going to get to that situation. I tell them there's lead out there, and I've talked to several attorneys on this matter. If their children get sick or lead is found in their blood, they can turn around and sue me for that, for those health problems.
City Water Superintendent Tim Martin says attorneys must prove that the water line is responsible for any illnesses. He adds recent testing indicated there is no issue with lead contamination in the city's water supplies. City Administrator A.J. Lyman indicated it's Smith's responsibility to replace the lead piping. Under the ordinance amendment approved by the council back in December, residents would have 10 years after 2027 to replace lead or galvanized pipes, unless they're leaking, in which case they must be replaced immediately.
You as the property owner are currently responsible for it. At some point, council, as it says there, may decide to do something about it and take on partial ownership or full ownership or no ownership or whatever. But as the ordinance exists today, even with that amendment, you own that service line. It is entirely within your ownership and responsibility to replace as it stands today.
Smith also claims MidAmerican Energy cut off electricity to the property, creating another setback. Smith and his contractor claim 6 months is enough time to make necessary repairs to the property. But Councilman Richard Jones questioned whether the property should receive another extension since no work has been completed in 9 months.
My problem is nothing happened. So what gives me any security that something will happen in 6 months, 4 months, whatever it is? If we do it again and we're back here in 6 months, we got nowhere.
What happened? Because he didn't help me.
I get it, but on our side, for 9 months, nothing happened.
After further discussion, Councilman John Eric Brantner motioned to table the discussion until the council's March 10th meeting, when City Attorney Milan Sorensen is present. The Page County Assessor's budget is set for next fiscal year. Following a budget hearing Monday night, the Page County Conference Board, comprised of city mayors, area school superintendents, and county supervisors, adopted the county assessor's budget for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. The hearing also followed the board's late January meeting to discuss the proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year, which includes a 10% pay raise for county assessor Jason Renander. During Monday's hearing, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen says he would have preferred to see a similar raise to those of other county officials.
I know I voted for this when we did it on the 2% for the assessor. And after I thought about it a while, there's a pretty good chance the supervisors are going to do 3% across the board for county employees. And I think it's ridiculous that we give a 2% to the assessor when the rest of the county employees are getting 3%. So I would like supervisors to consider that.
Supervisor Judy Clark says she felt 2% was a good spot due to some of the larger increases Renander received in previous years compared to other county employees. Renander told KMA News the percentage increase followed negotiations amongst the conference board members last month.
There were some discussions just about, you know, what the salary should be. And, of course, different members of the board spoke up and said their opinion about different things and ultimately ended up settling on doing a 2% increase for all staff in the assessor's office.
Renander says the total expenditures for his office are expected to increase by roughly $2,000 to just over $536,000, with over $229,000 covering salaries for himself, Deputy Assessor Darla McCall, and Appraiser Andy Stogdale.
Everybody got 2%. The deputy is 82% of the assessor, and the appraiser is 70%.
In other county budget business, the supervisors held a public hearing on the E-911 emergency management budget. Construction of Page County's new jail continues unabated. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors heard an update from Samuels Group's Chris Falk on construction efforts at the new county jail site on the south end of Clarinda, just off U.S. Highway 71. Voters approved a $16.7 million bond issue in November 2023 to finance the project. Falk says one of the bigger goals expected to be met soon is placing the detention ceilings to the new facility's booking area.
And those are finished ceilings, so electrical, sprinkler, HVAC guys are all working with WDSI as they lay those panels in to install their utilities in there. And then once they get the last panel in, it's done. So they should be done with those five ceilings. They'll be pretty close by the end of the week.
The new facility will house the county jail, sheriff's office, and 911 dispatch center. Falk adds the three large rooftop heating and cooling units have been installed in the building, along with significant progress on roof exhaust and insulation work.
They did get all the roof exhaust fans installed, so now they're hooking those up on the inside. So they've had their insulators on site, and they completed all the insulating that goes in the walls. So the drywall crews have been able to get a lot of their stuff done. I would say that we're 75% complete on drywalling and finishing. So that's going along pretty good.
Plans still call for the county departments to begin moving in and utilizing the facility by midsummer. Bridge repair work is set in Clarinda. By a 4-0 vote Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council approved awarding the contract for the North 16th Street Bridge Replacement Project to A.M. Coron & Son out of Atlantic for just over $1,085,000. Snyder & Associates' Dave Sturm says the bid was the lowest of five received through the bid letting process with the Iowa Department of Transportation. Sturm adds the majority of the bids fell under the amount given to the city through a federal grant to replace the structure that crossed over a creek near the Clarinda Country Club.
The bids range from just under 1.1 to 1.22, so they're actually five really tight bids. So good bids there. And I did want to let you know you do have $1.1 million in federal funding for this project, and they do pay 100% of construction. So right now, all of this cost would be reimbursed through the grant that you guys currently have. So, and that grant is just for construction.
While the federal grant will cover construction costs, City Manager Gary McLarnon tells KMA News the city's match covers the engineering fees for the project, estimated at $250,000 to $300,000. McLarnon says the nearly 100-year-old weight-limited bridge was identified during a biennial expansion as needed replacement, qualifying it for the City Highway Bridge Project.
Well, we knew a few years ago that it was starting to deteriorate to the point where it was going to need replaced. So we kind of put it off. Finally, we decided that we better go ahead and apply for a grant to replace the bridge, which we did. We changed the tonnage of the trucks, how much weight could be driven over the bridge. So we did do that first to try to save it a little longer.
McLarnon says the new bridge will provide a much-needed upgrade along the north end of one of the city's main thoroughfares.
Now, obviously, it'll be wider than what we've got there, and it'll be much more stable than what it is today. So it'll be a much nicer bridge, and I would assume it'll probably last another 100 years.
Sturm says crews will have 100 working days to complete the project with a late start date in June. Checking other news this week, a Des Moines man faces grooming and enticing a minor charges following an investigation in Creston. Ethan Hewitt reports.
The Creston Police Department says 44-year-old Ryan Anderson was arrested Tuesday for grooming, enticing a minor under 16 for sexual purposes, and dissemination and exhibition of obscene material to a minor. Authorities say the arrest came after officers conducted an undercover online operation targeting individuals attempting to exploit minors. Authorities say that during the investigation, an officer posed as a 14-year-old female while communicating through an online platform before transitioning communication to a texting platform. Police say during the conversation, the undercover officer clearly stated they were a 14-year-old. Despite knowing the age, authorities allege that Anderson continued communication of a sexual nature, sent obscene material, and made arrangements to meet the purported minor for sexual purposes. Police say Anderson then drove to a predetermined meeting location where he was taken into custody without incident. Anderson was taken to the Union County Jail and released after posting $11,000 cash or surety bond pending further court proceedings. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
Also this week, a suspect was arrested after allegedly setting off an explosive device outside a Red Oak church. Red Oak police say 42-year-old Matthew Daniel Sloan was arrested Tuesday in connection with an incident where officers were called to a loud explosion in the area of 600 Hammond Street. Upon arrival, authorities say officers located a device exploded next to the Methodist Church. Police say officers quickly obtained surveillance videos of a male later identified as Sloan igniting the device and running into a nearby apartment. Sloan was arrested after officers and Montgomery County Sheriff's deputies conducted a search warrant at the 600 block of Reed Street. He's being held in the Montgomery County Jail on $10,000 bond. One person was killed in a house fire near Griswold early Tuesday morning. The Cass County Sheriff's Office confirmed the fatality stemming from a house fire at 68444 560th Street. Authorities say fire crews from Griswold, Lewis, and Cumberland responded to the blaze, with arriving personnel finding the residence fully engulfed in flames and beginning to collapse. Authorities say after extinguishing the fire, responders discovered one dead individual inside the home. The cause of the fire is still undetermined. Montgomery County officials this week turned thumbs down on a tax abatement request from a local mobile home park. By unanimous vote Tuesday morning, the county's Board of Supervisors denied a request for abatement for mobile homes located in two lots in the Oak Point Estates Mobile Home Park in Red Oak. County Treasurer Jackie Porter says the owners of the former Villa Village Park seek tax abatement for selling mobile homes in lots 31 and 40 to individuals interested in refurbishing the structures.
Both homes abandoned, is my understanding. They can't do anything with these until the taxes are paid up or abated, one of the two. Both lots have to be brought up to code for water, sewer, as well as electrical, which is an approximate cost of $7,000 to $8,000 per lot.
Porter says the owners propose selling the mobile home in lot 40 for $500 and lot 31 for $300. Supervisor Alex Burton expressed hesitancy to provide tax abatement to the mobile homes, saying other county residents don't have that same opportunity.
I think it's a bad precedent that's potentially started. And then at the end of the day, this is a for-profit business that runs this park. You know, and in some cases, even for homeowners, we're not afforded them an opportunity, and they're not a for-profit. So I would be very apprehensive to do that.
Supervisor Bryant Amos motioned to deny the request, expressing similar sentiments regarding setting a precedent.
The park owns the lot. They charge rent for the lot. They pay taxes on the lot. The mobile homeowner is responsible for those taxes. I find it hard to believe that a mobile home that you're going to sell for $300 and $500, I don't care what you put in it, what's it going to be worth?
Supervisor Mark Peterson says other mobile homes in the park are in the same situation. Negotiations continue on a law enforcement agreement for the city of Sydney. Mayor Justin Shirley updated the Sydney City Council Monday night on negotiations with the Fremont County Sheriff's Office regarding a law enforcement contract. June 30th is the last day of the current five-year agreement between the city and county. The existing contract includes an annual cost of around $114,000 for the city. Shirley says much of the discussions from both sides continues to focus on budget constraints moving forward.
Both sides have a budget and needs, and things are tight. Our law enforcement contract right now is about $114,000 a year that we pay for services provided by the sheriff's department, and that all comes out of our general fund, and the general fund is solvent, but barely. And that's our greatest expense. So, you know, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40% of our general fund expenditures.
Well, some discussions have revolved around the city providing its own police officer. Shirley says he is unsure whether that is financially feasible. The mayor says another option is partnering with another city.
Some of the discussions that have been brought up is maybe partnering with a neighboring community that also contracts out law enforcement to see if we could, you know, do a joint type police force to at least partially offset the cost. And at the same time, that person would be able to, you know, enforce our city ordinances and things like that.
Shirley says another proposal is partnering with a school district on a police officer who would also serve as a school resource officer. While another meeting is scheduled for later this week, Shirley says the city and sheriff's office still have until June 30th to iron out an agreement.
We're not unhappy with the service provided by the Fremont County Sheriff's Department, just trying to be as cost conscious as we can and do our due diligence to make sure that we're spending the citizens' tax dollars the best way possible.
No formal action was taken Monday night. More discussion is expected at future council meetings. From the State House, public education spending is set for next fiscal year. Iowa's public K-12 schools will get a 2% increase in general state support, so that total state spending on each student will be over $8,100 next year. Republicans in the Iowa House approved the plan late last week, and on Monday, Senate Republicans voted to send it to the governor. Republican Senator Lynn Evans, a retired superintendent from Aurelia, says there are bookkeeping changes too, like updating October's enrollment count in January and sending school districts state funding to quarterly rather than monthly installments.
Quarterly payments will address a school district who face cash flow problems or issues in July and August. This will provide a summer payment and reduce administrative costs.
The decision also means every state funding education savings account for a private school student will get over $8,100 for the next school year. Senator Molly Donahue, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, says Iowa's public schools need far more than a 2% funding increase, and school boards will be forced to cut programs.
So somehow when it comes to private schools, the checkbook is open. But when it comes to the public schools, the backbone of the rural Iowa small towns and our cities, suddenly we are told to tighten the belts.
Senator Herman Quirnbach, a Democrat from Ames, says local public schools are struggling, cutting staff and programs, and some may be forced to consolidate.
We are already beginning to see from local school district decisions just exactly what the damage could be of falling short.
The deal includes a commitment to spend $7 million raising the pay of teachers' aides or paraeducators, plus money to help school districts that spend more than the statewide average on busing students to and from school. School boards must negotiate pay with staff, hold public hearings, and file a final budget plan by April 30th for the fiscal year starting July 1st. After 2 months of improvement, one of KMALAND's leading indicators shows continuing weaknesses in the rural economy. Creighton University's Rural Main Street Index for February totaled 47.9. That's down from 52.0 in January and ends the two-month streak of above-growth neutral readings. The survey of bank CEOs in a 10-state region, including Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri, considers 50.0 as growth neutral. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Monday morning, Creighton University economics professor Dr. Ernie Goss says some of the same issues continue to bog down rural economic conditions.
Some of that, of course, is just some of the struggles we have out there in terms of global trade. Some of the real concerns about some transportation issues, say, related to coming out of the Mideast and so on. Those are some real issues there.
February survey also notes 4 out of 10 bank CEOs favor pulling back on President Trump's tariffs on other countries. This was before last Friday's Supreme Court ruling striking down most of the president's tariff programs. Goss says it's too early to tell what impact the high court's ruling will have on the rural economy. And that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.